Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon. No, not Matt Harmon. We've got Alfredo Brown sitting in for the big dog here today. Reception, Perception, the show. We appreciate everyone here jumping in. Matt, today it's all about quarterbacks. Alfredo, how you doing, pal?
First of all, what a disappointment for everyone. You said James Cohen, Matt Harmon. And it's actually, no, it's the other guy that talks quarterbacks. Not at all what you were expecting. Enjoy the rest of this. So that'll be fun to try to live up to those.
No, it's going to be great. I am looking forward to it because I get to talk to you about quarterbacks and basically how they pair with some of these wide receivers that people have come to know and love. Okay, I want to get your thoughts first here in Cleveland. Deshaun versus Shador. I don't know, man. Like, it just, I have this big brain conspiracy theory that Monken went with Deshaun to keep ownership happy. I think he probably sees the product on the field and says, we're going to go to Shador, but you can't start with Shador, have Shador stink, and then go to Deshaun. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the other way around. If Deshaun stinks, then it's a lot easier to bring in Shador, if that makes any sense. I don't know. What do you think about my conspiracy theory? And what do you think about this quarterback? I'm using air quotes, quarterback battle there in Cleveland.
I am of the exact same mindset. I think that, like, us as fans that watch and love the game, we forget the business aspect of it sometimes. And I'm sure this is exactly what happened with Todd Monken. I'm sure he got this call weeks ago and was still like, hey, like, you know, it's not really a thing, right? Like, we have to start Deshaun. If it doesn't work out, then we move on, right? And I'll let you bench a guy if you need to. But Deshaun Watson has not looked good. Shedeur Sanders hasn't looked terrible, but, like, no one in this quarterback competition has actually looked good. And then when you look at the schedule, the way it shows up early in the season, they play the Jags and Bucks. That's probably two losses right there. Panthers is a coin toss. Steelers is probably another loss. Jets, if you lose to the Jets, I think you're probably getting benched after that one. And then if you do make it past that, you got the Ravens. So I think you're walking out of your first six games either 1-5 or 2-4. And I think you have all the ammo you need to be like, okay, the Deshaun Watson thing is over. We're moving on to Shedeur Sanders. Let him start week 7 against Tennessee. Give him an easy start here. And then if that doesn't work out, guess what? You got a bye week coming up eventually where you can make the switch to. Hell, I tweeted it out the other day. I could see the quarterbacks all going 1-4. And then we get the final two games of the season with Talen Green just going absolutely nuts, running around and throwing like 6 passes, but running for 100 yards.
Why not? You know, why not? I like it. I like that idea quite a bit here. Okay, let's talk about Tua Tagovailoa. He looks absolutely awful, man. Ugh. He looks horrid.
Yeah.
He looks so bad, bro. And yet when you chartered him, it feels like there was stuff that was better on tape than what some people might think. But it just, to me, I think when I see Tua, I see somebody who is incredibly inconsistent, and his misses are about as big as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a guy that's gotten too dependent in his career on quick throws. If the first read isn't there, he just looks super uncomfortable in the pocket. And now this is happening again, where he's having to learn this whole new offense. And it's not the same thing in Miami, where Mike McDaniel was catering the offense and the weaponry to him, right? And saying, mm-hmm. okay, we need to make this work because this is the franchise guy. And if I want to keep my job, I got to make him look good. Kevin Stefanski is now like, no, you have to fit to what we're doing. So much so to the point that Falcons radio hosts are already saying, maybe we cut to it before the season even starts.
Wow.
Because it just looks so bad, which is just wild after him. You know, he gets cut from Miami. Now he's in Atlanta. To get cut after just a few preseason games would be insane. But you think of Tua and what he's been good at. So many of his throws, nearly 72% of his throws have been short, third highest amongst the quarterbacks charted so far. He's put everything in his game into this small sandbox where he's like a kid riding a tricycle. He's really comfortable when you have those extra wheels. But if you take the wheels off and you try to make him ride a big boy bicycle or throw big boy routes, he just doesn't do it. He can't do it. Even some of his easy throws haven't been good. He was 24th in flats, 21st in curls. It's just like, okay, if he can do checkdowns and screens, then I guess that's what we got. But what I wrote in my article was the very last line. If timing, accuracy, and quick throws are the things that are supposed to be his strengths, his calling cards, then what's he actually good at if he wasn't good at that last year? And now he doesn't look like he's good at it in the preseason with Atlanta.
When you take a look at some of the overall numbers, Tua was actually really good against man coverage. I think a lot of that had to do with the area of which he is throwing, you know, these quick, short underneath stuff. So I think there was a little bit of grade inflation there. But that being said, I thought he scored really well in regards to success rate throwing to the intermediate area of the field. So if we're kind of like slicing it together and like really trying to find like kernels of, you know, positivity for Tua Tagovailoa, I think I point to those two stats and say, all right, he wasn't the absolute dog worst in these two areas. The man stuff, okay, I will bypass that, but you can't get around the fact that he did chart well throwing to the intermediate area of the field.
A lot of that stuff is conceptually what Mike McDaniel was able to do with his receivers, right? Because some of these games charted had Tyreek Hill. Most of these games, if not all these games, had Jaylen Waddle. But this was also just part of the offense where they were saying, okay, we want to win middle of the field. We want to win on digs. We want to win on overs. We're running our slants a little bit deeper. And that's where Miami was winning, was on these in-breaking routes and crossing routes where, yeah, one-on-one against man coverage, Jaylen Waddle's going to beat a guy off a slant every single time. Tyreek Hill's going to win on a dig every single time. And it became really second nature for that Dolphins offense. So those were things that, yes, it looks good in the numbers. And then you start to ask, it's the friend that gets in the dance floor and he's only got the one dance move. And you're like, oh, he can only do that one thing. He's doing that same move way too much. The song's already changed. And like, that's just kind of what worked for Miami. When they lost Tyreek Hill, the offense looked totally different. And I don't want to sit here and bash the guy, because I think there are some things that he does really, really well. I think he can still win against zone coverage.
Yeah.
But I think right now, mentally, I do feel like he is just a shell of his former self. He's not the guy that we saw 2 years ago with Tyreek playing really well. Just even in these preseason games where things are supposed to be lighter, he's fumbling snaps. He can't get the ball out in time. When he gets pressure, he's freaking out. I worry that we're never going to see that guy again.
And my other question too is like, why is this guy freaking out in practice? You know, like, that is such a bad look. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like scrambling around in the happy feet and just, I mean, you can't look that bad in practice. I mean, you know you're not going to get hit. Like, what is the deal here? You know, it's, I don't know, man. It's, to me, it's just very discouraging seeing the, more than anything, seeing the body language. You know, the body language just is absolutely awful for Tua Tagovailoa. And again, by the way, if you guys want to find this data, receptionperception.com. But Tua Tagovailoa's some of his data, man, it's interesting. You know, as Alfredo mentioned, him throwing to the dig route, was good. He had a good number throwing slants as well. So these in breakers for Tua to the short and intermediate area of the field, pretty darn successful. And remember, and Alfredo, like, remind the folks, like, it's trying as best as you can to be independent of the wide receivers as well.
Yeah, right. Like, there's times where even if there's a drop, if Tua got the ball to the spot that it needs to be, I'm going to mark that as a success. Now, if he's throwing the ball a little bit behind or a little too forward, or he threw his receiver into a bad situation, that's a miss, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, there are going to be things like that. But we try to make this where when we chart and find what is a success, we want to do this independent of whether the receiver actually caught the ball. It's does right. the ball get to the place it needs to be?
Timing and location are critical when doing the charting in regards to these quarterbacks. Okay, man, you have talked, you've said nice things about Cam Ward. His charting, you know, you thought was pretty oh, interesting no. and intriguing. That being said, why has that not translated with this new coaching staff this preseason? Because I'll tell you what, other than Tua Tagovailoa, I think Cam Ward's probably looked the worst.
Yeah, it hasn't been pretty, but I think you mentioned like half of it right there, the equation. It's new coaching staff. There is a new playbook. He's got two new wide receivers that he's throwing to. Everything is new for him. And while I can give him kind of a pass for that because he's starting his second year in the league, I don't give a pass to guys like Tua or you know, fifth and sixth year quarterbacks that are learning these new things and still struggling. I also don't want to overstate preseason too much. And I know this sounds like me kind of coming to the aid of Cam Ward here, but he's still a young player with tools. Sure. And honestly, a lot of times I still want to bet on players with tools being able to overcome things. He does look a little bit calmer in the backfield when he's dropping back in the pocket. He's not leaving the pocket every chance he gets. I think what we are seeing, though, is a lot of those bad plays just really stand out. Granted, the games we saw were against the 49ers and Seahawks, defenses that run themselves very well. The Seahawks did play a lot of backups, but I also kind of subscribe to the narrative, too, that the backups in these preseason games play so hard, man. They play, mm-hmm. this is their mm-hmm. Super Bowl, because they need to make yes. they need to make the roster. They are fighting for their life, where I'll watch some of the plays and like Tajay Spears kind of like saw a ball and he's like, I just don't want to get hurt. You know, like he saw it there and he's like, I'm not really going to put a lot of effort into that one I'm in good. The air.
Yeah.
So like I kind of get some of that narrative there. What I think is going to be a little bit of a struggle for Cam Ward is like something he has even admitted to. He's still learning how to properly read defenses and read blitzes and read rotating coverages and a lot of things that take time. And in the midst of doing that, he's learning a new playbook and getting timing down with these new receivers. That's the biggest thing that honestly, I don't think enough people think about with quarterbacks is that, oh, well, good receiver, good quarterback. It's got to work, right? Like, no, there's a reason that we saw Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown struggle so much last year. It's like timing and chemistry is everything to these guys. And, right. and it takes a while to get there. Even for as great as Tua and Tyreek eventually got to be, it took time for them too. So Cam Ward, I think he'll probably have a bumpy start. I can see sort of the writing on the wall where midway through the season, we're seeing a guy that does look a lot better than what we're seeing here in the preseason.
Okay, we go and stay in this division. I want to talk about in the AFC East. We talk about the Jets here in regards to Geno Smith. He's obviously an older quarterback. I hated what I saw last year. I did not think he looked good in any way, shape, or form. I think the major question, especially if we're thinking about, okay, we got Garrett Wilson out here, and quite honestly, I think the offense is actually pretty darn intriguing, you know, like other than quarterback, you've got Garrett Wilson. Adonai Mitchell, I think, is a good number two. You know, you pick up a guy in Omar Cooper, a decent number three. You know, you've got running backs, you've got multiple running backs. I mean, Breece Hall is top of the line, in my opinion, you know, and then tight ends are there too. Mason Taylor, really interesting young tight end. I don't know, man, like to me, the ingredients are there. It's really about the straw that stirs the drink here. Is Geno washed? Like, that's my major concern in New York, that if Geno is just cooked, this offense is cooked. It doesn't matter how many interesting pieces you got, because you don't got a quarterback. I don't know. What does Alfredo Brown think about Geno Smith?
Yeah, last year's film was not good, man. Last year's film was not good at all. And I think it is important to have the context that there weren't a lot of great targets to throw to once Brock Bowers was gone. The offensive line was really bad. The run game was incredibly inefficient. And this was an offense that just looked bland, like so much so that they changed play callers. Like everything that could go wrong for Geno and the Raiders went wrong. That doesn't necessarily mean that everything's going to be better in New York. I still have a lot of fears with Frank Reich, who just has not been a good offensive mind as of recent. It's you kind of see some of these coaches stop evolving with the times, and they just, when you see their offense out there, it looks so static and so boring. But I'll say this, if there is a glimmer of hope here for Geno, I don't think that he physically looks washed. Like, I don't see a guy who doesn't have arm strength anymore. I don't see a guy who can't be accurate when he needs to. I still see a guy that when pressure is coming, he can handle it for the most part. I think when he gets overwhelmed, that's when we're in trouble. But at least in the preseason, and I'm going to put a big asterisk next to that, because preseason, everything here, especially for these starting quarterbacks, it is fully scripted against a team they have been practicing against all week. The coaches know the ins and outs, and they're going to say, okay, here is a 15-play game script that we want to run to perfection. And the quarterback can usually do that. I mean, most of the quarterbacks have looked good doing that. So I'll say that there's a glimmer of hope that Geno still looks good. But when I talk about arm strength, accuracy, handling pressure, I don't see a guy that's totally washed. Does that mean the Jets are going to be good? Probably not. I think we're looking at what could actually be the worst case scenario for a Jets team like this, is where like they are just good enough where they don't have a great draft pick for a new quarterback, but they are still just bad enough that they are not in the playoff picture at all.
Ugh, tough. I don't know. I mean, again, I want good things for the Jets and their fans, because it has been so rough, man. The Jets have gone through it. I mean, other than the Browns are at the bottom of the barrel. But, man, other than them, the Jets have just been, it has been tough.
James, what are we doing here, man? 25 years since a playoff win for my Miami Dolphins.
Okay.
Come on, man.
Okay. True. Also true. But at least in recent memory, like the fact that you guys had like Tyreek and Jalen Waddle, like you guys were, you know, doing some things, making some noise in the AFCs. I don't know, man. Like, yes, you haven't won in 25 years, which is for sure. That's not good. Like, what is going on at the AFC East? But why is it? It's always the Patriots. Why? Why is it? It doesn't matter. Like, they have a second year quarterback, and it's like, yep, it's still the Patriots. It's like, golly,
they experienced the rebuild.
Can somebody else do something? You know,
right?
Please. I don't know. Okay, let's dive in to a couple of profiles that have dropped on the site. Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones. I want to start here with Kyler Murray. And this opening line that you wrote in the profile is an absolute banger. Quote, Kyler Murray has become a short game merchant. That is not a short joke. I mean that literally. That is an absolute fire first line from our guy Alfredo Brown. But talk about it in regards to football terms here. Kyler Murray has a big arm, and he can sling it, and yet it seems as if he is very hesitant to unholster that gun.
A lot has changed since Bob's Discount Furniture opened its first store 35 years ago. Car phones have become cell phones, grunge band hits have become oldies, and you can order furniture online. But what hasn't changed is the way they do business, aka the Bob's way. Doing things the Bob's way means that when I shop at Bob's, I know I'll find the latest top-rated styles like the Aspen sofa for just $399, bedrooms with storage and charging, Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and more. All at 90s-era prices. There's even no money down financing and lightning fast shipping, so you aren't stuck waiting months for your furniture to arrive. Plus, Bob's still makes furniture shopping fun with friendly associates and cafes full of free treats and ice cream. Want to see for yourself? Stop into your local Bob's store this Labor Day weekend to party it up like it's 1991 and celebrate 35 years of doing things the Bob's way.
Hey, Tiffany Stratton here from the WWE SmackDown. Tiffy time can be crazy, y'all, and when I get a break, that means it's Chumba time. Chumba Casino has hundreds of online social games and new titles landing every week. There's always something fresh to try, and the daily boosts make Chumba even more fun. They're little epiphanies that make my day sparkle. Ready for a fun way to switch off and take some time for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Yeah, he's another one of these guys that I don't know if just over the years the game has changed the way he thinks, but there is a big apprehension to the way he plays the game where I'm seeing, I mean, James, second highest percentage of checkdowns at nearly 18% of his attempts. 14% of his attempts were screens, that's sixth highest. Curls were at 14%. It just almost everything here was by the line of scrimmage. And when we wanted him to do something downfield, a little different, right? He struggled in stuff that required downfield timing, rhythm, and anticipation. And that's all stuff that goes into the Kevin O'Connell offense. And I think the biggest thing that stood out to me is like what will show up in the numbers is, oh, he was actually pretty good at throwing the nines. No, Marvin Harrison Jr. was good at catching those contested catches on the nines.
Interesting.
And that was something that I was surprised with, because when you're not watching every snap of a player like Marvin Harrison Jr., it's like, oh, he didn't have a good season. And then I look back at what he was being asked to do. I'm like, this dude is just being asked to win consistently in man coverage, hit these 50-50 balls. And that was kind of it when it came to throwing the ball downfield for Kyler. It was actually extremely disappointing. And I already had my questions about the fit in Minnesota. Now I'm even right. more worried.
Okay, yeah, so that was my big contention, is that Kyler Murray, people think that it's a huge upgrade at the quarterback position in Minnesota. And for me, I don't understand why Minnesota even went with this move at all. You know, you've got a guy in Kyler that, is he better than J.J. McCarthy? Yeah, sure. I think that's a fair assessment. But God, I mean, there's any number of backups that I think are better than J.J. McCarthy right now, right? And so for me, why invest in a guy in Kyler Murray that, to me, very clearly does not fit your offense, right? Like, you're talking about a dude that, in the KOC offense, I think you've got to hit those dig routes. Like, you've got to hit in breakers, right? And yes, do you need to hit those downfield routes, those streaking shots along the boundary? For sure, you need to hit those too. But it feels like the staple of a KOC offense is to attack the intermediate and middle of the field with these deep overs and these digs. And that's just not something that Kyler has ever done in his career, Alfredo, to the point where KOC is talking about how Kyler can't see the intermediate and deep middle of the field because he is so short compared to his linemen. Bro, this is a bizarre pairing. I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, how do you think Kyler will actually work hand in hand with KOC?
You can see it on film that he actually can't see. And I know, like, short jokes aside, man, he was getting the ball batted down like three or four times a game. And that's not me exaggerating. I would have to zero out a bunch of these reps because the ball would just get batted down. With other quarterbacks, a lot of times it's intentional throwaways. With him, he was looking for these throwing lanes and he just couldn't do it. And a lot of times when he is hitting the middle of the field, it's after he's left the pocket and had to scramble for a little bit. What was interesting was that you mentioned the dig routes, and he was actually like solid at digs this past year, but he threw so few of them that he was really only throwing them when players were absolutely wide open. And that was the thing that bothered me, is that like Kyler struggled against man in my charting. And that was something that when I charted JJ McCarthy, not to compare the two, but I saw that JJ McCarthy had to go up against man more than any other rookie quarterback. Like, it was a very high percentage. And it's a lot of that has to do with the way that Kevin O'Connell runs his offense. So you've got an offense that is going to be facing a lot of man coverage, typically Kyler, who struggles against man coverage, and then an offense that wants to win on breakers and in intermediate and deep routes where Kyler struggles, or he just doesn't throw them at all. So this could not be the more like oil and water mix of any quarterback and team pairing that I had seen. I had thought maybe in this offseason the Vikings go all in after a guy like Mac Jones, who would have fit perfect.
Yes,
or heck, if you're gonna go free agent, then spend the money even on Malik Willis, because I think he could have been a better fit. But like, I don't understand the Kyler Murray thing. I'm not the biggest champion of JJ McCarthy. I will say he kind of got a raw deal here, but I get worried. I don't think Kyler's going to be able to play the full season. That's not an injury thing. I think we're going to get to the midseason mark and be like, man, this really didn't work out.
Yes. And by the way, just to kind of sort of highlight how little Kyler would actually test big boy routes, nearly 30% of his routes were screens and checkdowns.
Yeah.
Screens and checkdowns. Alfredo Brown, 30%. That is not an offense, man. Like, that is, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, that is, that's about as gimmicky as it gets. And dude, you cannot sustain a real offense throw with 30% of your throws going to screens and checkdowns, man. It just doesn't work. Just 5.1% of his throws were on digs. Like, again, this is, I don't understand how Minnesota saw that player and said, yep, bring him in the building. I don't get it.
Yeah, I think it was just them looking at what was left on the menu and being like, okay, we're hungry. I guess I'll eat that. It's the only thing you got left. But 70%, actually a little more than 70% of Kyler's passes traveled under 10 yards. Like, this was, when I say it's a short game merchant, like that is exactly what's going on here. That does not pair well with guys like Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, who win downfield so well. And the checkdowns were happening even when it wasn't designed, even when the pressure wasn't there. There was just times where Kyler was looking around, didn't see anyone, and he just went to the check down. So we could see him throwing the ball to Jordan Mason a lot, even when it's not intentional. So that's something where, like, I get worried this offense could stall out a lot. And there's hype, there's excitement, because KOC's done this in short spurts with guys like Nick Mullen and Josh Dobbs. Kyler struggles to play on time and stay in structure. And that is what has made the KOC offense work for so many of these other quarterbacks.
Can I say this about KOC and the whole quarterback redemption arc? And, you know, you mentioned some of those players. I mean, obviously the biggest one is Sam Darnold.
Right.
He comes through and, you know, earns himself $100 million contract and all this, and goes and wins the Super Bowl, right? And I don't think that's possible unless he works with KOC and KOC, you know, helps him find himself in Sam Darnold. Okay, all of those players, though, this is, to me, the biggest trait difference between all of those guys and Kyler Murray. All of those guys legitimately get in trouble because they actually hang in the pocket too long.
Right.
right? And so KOC had to speed up their clock and say, all right, listen, you've got two beats. And if it's not there, toss it, man. Like, just don't worry about it. But don't hang in there and get killed. Don't hang in there and under pressure throw a bad ball. So he had to speed up their clock. With Kyler Murray, it's the exact opposite for me. Right. Like, and by the way, early in his career, the checkdown number is really interesting, Alfredo, because earlier in his career, and I know we don't have the charting numbers here, but I would say just off of eyeball, like he didn't throw a lot of checkdowns because, dude, he would just tuck it and run, get those, you know, get those freaking, you know, Wile E. Coyote legs and like Roadrunner legs going. Right, he got the Roadrunner legs going, and he was out of there. But now, dude, his rushing has absolutely cratered. He doesn't want to take those hits, and now he is checking down quite a bit. So, I don't know, when you take away the legs, the thing that actually made him special, because the arm talent was there, we knew he wasn't a structured quarterback, but he could throw the rock, and man, he could get out the gate and run it as well. When you take that away, this is the kind of player that you're left with. That's why I feel like, okay, this is the major difference, that he's too skittish in the pocket. How does KOC coach that out of him? I don't know if we're going to see that.
I don't think so either. And the struggle too is that if you are going to get out of the pocket like Kyler has been doing, you better be good out of the pocket. And he wasn't. I'm looking at the numbers right here. He would go out of the pocket 53.8% of the time. That was his success rate out of the pocket, 53.8%, 27th amongst quarterbacks charted. Under pressure success rate, 41.4% success, 25th amongst quarterbacks charted. Wow. So it's not like when he abandoned the pocket that he was better and creating something better for himself. It just wasn't good. And the other thing too is you're going to have a guy now in Kyler who he's going to be asked to go under center a bit more, which is something he's not used to. He's going to have to run play action. He's going to be able to have to turn his back to the defense for a moment to then hit the designed read. There is no, you know, improvisation here like he's so used to. And that's something where it's going to take time. And we've seen some of those struggles in camp. I think a lot of people are going to be a little disappointed. If I'm wrong, man, I hope I'm wrong, and I wish nothing but the best for Kyler and the Vikings. But this might be a little disappointing for people that are expecting a big career renaissance.
Daniel Jones is another profile that can be found on the site right now. And the difference between Daniel Jones and Kyler Murray, a little bit, you know, pretty stark here. But when I read the profile, some of the stats that really jumped out to me was that, dude, he threw a lot of out routes, 13% route participation throwing out routes. And, dude, he was really good at it, 84% success rate throwing that out. You think about Daniel Jones here, it's a little bit different of a wide receiver room. Alfredo, Alec Pierce, Josh Downs, and now they add Keenan Allen. They take Michael Pittman away. What does Daniel Jones, if he can get back to that early season form, what does that end up looking like for some of those wide receivers?
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
You know, recommendations can be great. Maybe someone recommended this podcast, and here you are. But home projects are different. If a podcast isn't your thing, you lose a few minutes. If you hire your cousin's neighbor to mount your TV, you might end up with a lopsided screen and wall damage. Maybe I know a guy just isn't enough for your home. That's why Thumbtack works. It matches you with top-rated local pros with photos, reviews, and credentials all in one place. For your next home project, try Thumbtack. Hire the right pro today.
Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast!
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Yeah, you mentioned those out routes, but it's not just those. It's digs, it's comebacks. It's a lot of those intermediate routes that ended up being pretty damn good for Daniel Jones. And a lot of that was the way that the offense was structured. You had a lot of pre-snap motion. You had a lot of play action rollouts where he would have his designed safety valve, who would be Tyler Warren, underneath. But then a lot of these routes would be designed for Michael Pittman and Josh Downs. And then he'd have his deep option in Alec Pierce. And sometimes Alec Pierce would be in on some of these comebacks and some of these inbreakers. But Josh Downs was severely underrated. I know he's a reception perception favorite. He's one of mine as well. I expect him to take over a lot of the work that Michael Pittman had this past year, but the offense was really catered to what Daniel Jones could do well. It was made simple, and it was just kind of a perfect fit for what all these receivers did well. Everyone had their role, and Daniel Jones getting out of the pocket on these play action rollouts just made the game simpler for him. And he still has to make the throws, right? Like, he still has to be accurate and get the ball to the right person and make the right decision. Yeah. He was doing it. He was doing it consistently. As the season went on, things changed a little bit because the opponents got harder, but Daniel Jones was still impressive early on in the season.
I like the route diet that Daniel Jones employed as well. Again, 13% route participation on the out, 8% of his throws were on the dig route, 13% on the curl, 15% slant. You got double digit figures here on the flat and check down. I think that's fine. By the way, I talked about how Kyler Murray, 30% of his throws were screens and check downs. As a comparison, Daniel Jones, just 15%, right? So, and that is much more in line with, I think, you know, modern day quarterbacking. Like, look, you want to have a good chunk of your throws on screens and checkdowns because, you know, those are just free yards, right? And it keeps the offense on track. But when you become over reliant on those things, then it becomes impossible to get downfield. You're not hitting. You're just not giving your offense a chance to hit on explosives. I think that's really where it becomes a debilitating force. But for Daniel Jones, again, I thought he spread the ball around pretty good. He hit a bunch of different routes. He kept the defense honest in different parts of the football field. And yeah, man, your charting definitely shows that as well. It's him and Shane Steichen. I don't know what it is, but him and Shane Steichen, man, like, they were definitely mind melding at their peak.
Yeah, this offense was death by a thousand cuts when defenses would face them because they would just keep getting these 8 yard chunks. Like, it wasn't huge, but then it would be a 15 yard chunk, a 10 yard chunk, a 3 yard play. And a lot of these were guys like Josh Downs and Michael Pittman winning on slants over the middle and getting an 11 or 12 yard gain and consistently doing that. And then hitting Tyler Warren, the flats on a rollout where we saw Daniel Jones out of the pocket all the time. He actually had the sixth highest success rate out of the pocket amongst quarterbacks charted. So this was something that just, it worked well for them. And then you mentioned the checkdowns. The difference here was that a lot of these were, you could tell they were intentional. You know, we were getting Jonathan Taylor in the right place where, yeah, we're going to have our first read, but it's kind of like a, if that's there, almost like an option play where it's like, did Alec Pierce beat this guy deep? No. Okay. Jonathan Taylor, this is for you, man. And he would have guys in front of him. So it wasn't quite a screen, but it seemed like they were much more intentional with how they were checking down. So even though it wasn't as often, it was extremely effective because there were so many times where I see Jonathan Taylor take one of these checkdowns for 40, 50 yards. And obviously he's incredibly talented, but it was just the structure of the offense working really well for every single player involved. I was thoroughly impressed.
Can we talk about, okay, taking Michael Pittman out of this group, we add Keenan Allen, but Alec Pierce is coming back from ankle surgery. Still have not seen him at all. Josh Downs is anticipated to have a much bigger role in this offense, but I'm going to be honest with you. I am a little bit worried about taking away somebody who, like Michael Pittman, you talk about, hey, listen, Daniel Jones, you know, all these slant routes and a lot of like really solid intermediate area of the field type of route concepts. I'm a little worried, man. I've described Michael Pittman as the meat and potatoes wide receiver for Indianapolis. You take him away, you still got the eye candy and Alec Pierce and Josh Downs, but you add old man Keenan Allen. I don't know, man. What are your thoughts here on the wide receiver depth and how their skill set will then marry and pair with Daniel Jones' skill set?
From what I saw with Josh Downs, he was the same guy that I remember watching coming out of UNC, where he was still surprisingly fast running these routes downfield, and he could win on digs. Would he get blown up by a safety? Absolutely. He's still a small guy. Like, that still happens, but he would just get open nearly every single time that he was going up against man coverage. And there's one route where, man, I was surprised how often Josh Downs was targeted in the red zone, but he was. And I think it's because defenses wanted to go man coverage so much and he could get open in small spaces. It's not a small joke, I swear. But there was just a beautiful chair route that he ran where he left the defender off the screen and Jones missed him by like just a yard on the throw. Yeah. So I think there's still a role here where Josh Downs can do a modified version of what he was doing last year. And then Keenan Allen can sort of come in and be the meat and potatoes guy that's winning on a lot of those just simple slants, simple curls, sit in the open space. You know the Shane Steichen offense already. I think what we end up seeing here is that they both kind of play a modified version of what we saw last year between Pittman and Downs. I think Downs can have a greater target share and he can win more downfield, whereas Keenan Allen can do some of those things a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. I think they might cap each other a little bit, but yeah. with Downs playing a bit more, I think, in two wide receiver sets, I do get excited about that. I still think that there is a good fit here where he can do a lot of the same things that Pittman did, just do it in his own little special Josh Downs way.
Sounds like you're making short jokes, pal. I'm not.
No, lie. He gets open a little bit more. He gets open a little bit more. He doesn't win a lot of those like wall off by using your body type of, you know, contested catches he can't win on a lot of those like tough, gritty, grimy routes where maybe Keenan Allen can, who I think he's like 40 pounds more than him. That works. Josh Downs is going to have to be the other guy that can win downfield if Alec Pierce is still out there. Even if he's not, or whether he is or isn't, Josh Downs is going to have to win downfield more often than he has previously, and I think he can do it.
Okay. Very quickly, I think when you dive through some of Daniel Jones's charting numbers, they all appear to be, I don't know, like very close to league average, you know? Yeah. So I think when you start sorting the data, it doesn't present itself as being fantastic in any way, shape, or form. But that being said, it just was so rock solid. And I don't know, have we just become desensitized to like Colts quarterbacks because they were going through such a rough stretch and Daniel Jones is offering them a steady hand, and we kind of like overemphasize like how steady he was? Or are there truly like really special parts of his game that you say, okay, this player, when he does this thing, is really, really good? Because again, I think when you look at his scores against man coverage, his scores against zone coverage, short, intermediate, middle, they're all, most of his scores are very close to league average.
Yeah, I think that what he did so well last year was just play in structure and stop panicking like he has in years past. In years past, like, he has taken a play under pressure and made it worse and thrown an interception or taken a bad sack or fumbled the ball. Whereas this got him out of the pocket more often, where he was winning and making the simple throws that he has needed to. And in a way, like, that's also what has worked for Sam Darnold, right? Like, when I look at Sam Darnold, he's a good quarterback. I don't know that there are a lot of things that make him special. And I'm trying to define that word as best as I can here in the way that you presented it, is that, do I think that Daniel Jones is a special quarterback? No, I think that you can scout a college quarterback to come in and do a lot of the same things Daniel Jones did. Do I think he's a good fit for this offense and he can help this team win games and win playoff games? Yes, I do think he can. But last year when we saw hit, the numbers look good. I have to be honest, a lot of it ended up coming down to the schedule too. Like you start to look at it. Six of his first 10 games came against defenses that finished bottom half in passing yards allowed. Tennessee twice, Arizona, Pittsburgh, all finished 23rd or worst. You go against Miami, you go against just so many of these bad teams. In those games, 115.8% passer rating, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception. Then when he started to go against some of these better defenses, the passer rating dropped down to 90 from 115 to 90. And the touchdown interception ratio was 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. So we started to see a guy come back down to earth. So when I say he's good, yeah, he's good. He can beat the bad teams. He can beat the bad defenses and he can do what he's told to do. Can he beat the good defenses? Can he make plays that maybe aren't always there? Sometimes. But that doesn't make him special. I think it just makes him good.
I think... when I think about Daniel Jones, he really checks a lot of boxes when I'm thinking about ideal game manager. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the ideal game manager for me, where, man, you're just hoping he doesn't screw it up and he's just good enough to keep the offense on track. If you've got playmakers surrounding him like they did last year, Jonathan Taylor was on an unbelievable run to start the season. Michael Pittman, Alec Pierce, Josh Downs. That's a really, really good. Shoot, we didn't even talk about Tyler Warren, for goodness sakes. And this guy's a special young player too, right? So, Jones had a ton of talent around him. And it just felt like, especially in those first, 9-10 games, man, he didn't screw it up. I don't know if he elevated anybody, but we had been so accustomed to seeing bad quarterback play in Indianapolis. Maybe we were over-indexing the wins, man. The wins seemed to carry a lot more weight in Indianapolis, and tying that to Daniel Jones in a way that maybe, again, was over-indexed. I don't know. I think we'll find out.
Yeah, I think a little bit of it, too, is maybe the way that we're looking at guys like Tua to Atlanta or Kyler to Minnesota. It's like, well, if it doesn't work out here, it's probably the end of the career. And then we're oh, they're winning games. Okay, some of that just gets narrative-driven, right? Where you're like, oh, okay, so he wasn't a complete disaster. That's solid quarterback, because I remember it so differently in my head of like, Daniel Jones is crushing it.
Yes.
And then I looked back and I'm like, oh, he was just kind of okay. He just wasn't, failing. I'm sorry to put it that way, but that's kind of what it was. And so I think he was a pleasant surprise.
And that's why I'm asking you the questions that I'm asking you, right? Because again, I'm with you. I remembered it slightly different. I know the narrative was very different than the actual charting numbers, but that's what's so great about the charting numbers, Alfredo. You cut through the noise, you cut through the narrative, and you get the player that you get, man. So I thought this was, again, really illuminating and really walking and talking with you to walk through his numbers. It's invaluable, brother. And again, this is why you got to go read the profiles. You can't just look at the numbers. You got to read the profiles, because Alfredo Brown is giving you that insight that only he can provide. It's really good information. ReceptionPerception.com does a tremendous job talking about how you're going to marry some of these guys to the talent that is around them. Cutting through the noise is Alfredo Brown. Alfredo, man, we appreciate the time, brother.
Yeah, James, thank you so much for having me, man.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.